For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at acsmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Today is Monday, July 31st. And as always, this summer, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for 50% for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. John, we've done this a few times now. I still cannot read.
You did a great job.
You know, thank you. But guess what? You know what? I may not be able to read, but I do know one thing.
What's that?
And that is, we've got very few rules. One of them is don't tweet. Never, ever, ever tweet. It's a bad idea.
And what happens? What happens when you tweet, Austin?
Bad things. You know what's worse than tweeting, though? Doubling down.
Oh, no.
It's ugly. I mean, we have to talk about it because it became a national news story. But legitimately was like spoken about by legitimate publications and all over the internet on Saturday. It's fun when little parts of Spartan Twitter leak out into the larger Twitter.
It's terrifying.
It's scary that the rest of the world can become aware of some of this stuff. But if you missed it, there is, I don't want to say her name, but there's a Michigan Twitter personality, I suppose, who was claiming to be threatened in ties with what Mike Valenti said last week, because it's probably worth even going all the way back to that. Basically, Mike Valenti went on the air. You know, he is a firebrand. He is one of those guys who will just sort of say whatever he wants to say. He's got great moments. He's got cringy moments. I think more often than not, he's pretty close to the mark, and he's a true Spartan diehard who speaks with age and quote-unquote wisdom of having been through some terrible times. If you've never listened to his 2006 rant, I mean, to turn this off right now and go find it, because it's the greatest thing you'll ever listen to. But
if you're quoting something decades later, it was a good rant.
Yeah. If you've ever heard the term Jehu Colcrick was a bowling ball or make plays, that's Mike Valenti. So go back and listen to that. But either way, he came out and basically said, hey, this rivalry is super toxic. It's a bad idea to have it be a night game in East Lansing this year. And he's like, I wouldn't come with my children. It more or less is what he said. Of course, some on social media took that to be like a direct threat, which is just,
oh God,
incredibly, dead. It's just incredibly silly. And, you know, from there, we had a certain Michigan personality go on Twitter and claim that she had been essentially attacked or directly threatened by this burner account from a Michigan State fan made. She then responded to somebody replying to her asking to out them. And she took a screenshot of the header And in the header, it said edit profile. You can only have that in your header if that's your account.
So she
completely outed herself and her own burner, and then tried to own up to it and like take accountability for it. And it all came off, you know, I respect her for throwing her, you know, throwing herself on the train tracks, but like to cry wolf so hard and then do something like that. Like I've never heard of more of a touch grass moment. Like just go outside, put the phone down, and just think about anything else for a really, really long time.
Yeah, there. That's that was a tough scene, and maybe a eye-opening moment for many. Yeah, if you're getting upset, that upset about other people, what other people are saying, like, well, never tweet is the big takeaway here, right?
Exactly.
Certainly don't tweet about it.
Yeah. Like, the one place you don't need to talk about it is social media. That's talk about it with thousands of people. That's absolutely true.
Here's a good litmus test. Talk to your partner about the thing, and if it sounds insanely online, it probably is, and it's not worth tweeting about.
Yep. I think reading a tweet out loud when it's going to be something like that is probably a good move. And then hear yourself say it. And if you are disgusted with yourself, just don't do it. Don't hit send. Don't.
It's a good mom test. Read it to your mom.
Yeah. And oh God.
If she's cool with the tweet, let her fly.
Yeah, I wish I had taken my own advice once upon a time with that. But you know, hey, you live and you learn.
When we try and spread the gospel of never tweets.
Yeah, it comes from a place of knowledge. Would you say?
Oh man. Well, one very online thing happened that became real was SpartanDog.com. Sorry, SpartanDog.com. Which there should be a SpartanDog.com, first of all.
It's a good point.
Okay, first, and then second of all, very cool event that the football team hosted. Full transparency, Austin and I did not know what it was last week. Now we do. It was a jersey reveal, and then also like a pretty cool like networking hang event with the team. Invite only. Pretty cool opportunity. So I thought that was a great touch. I think it's always hard to build like excitement and momentum when the product you had the year before wasn't a bowl team. And I think mission accomplished. I think MSU's fan base is excited for this season, despite replacing a lot of key positions and a lot of unknowns. And I think that's hard to do. And they pulled it off in my eyes. But how about you?
Yeah, I think while we, you know, the surprise was a little bit spoiled, I do love that it goes beyond the football field, though. Like, that's a lot of alums were back. I mean, everybody from, like, Ike Reese, who was on the team in, like, what, the 80s? Something like that, the 90s? Like,
yeah.
A while ago. He was there. A bunch of the guys, you know, BJ Cunningham and Mark Dell, like, two guys that were in school while I was there were, not to make myself sound old, but, like, I am. They were there. It was just cool. I think it's cool that, you know, you don't get that from every new head coach. And while Mel Tucker has been here for 3 years now, it's like those guys didn't play for him. And to still have Mark D'Antonio was there. So just to kind of have the whole lineage be there, I thought was a very cool touch. And obviously, you know, the real reveal of the jerseys, the long awaited, heavily rumored, all black jersey. I got to say, I prefer this trend to the neon trend. I think it's cool that they listen. It's cool that the, you know, the redesign like really is pretty in line with what we said before. Like I love the helmet stripe. I think the helmet stripe is by far the coolest part of the whole thing. And I think the black jersey is cool. So rather than going hardcore neon, which not a personal favorite of mine, really gimmicky, I think the black is like, I think the black is cool. What did you think?
Absolutely. It's also a hard to, when you know you don't have neon in your back pocket, like you got to manufacture some excitement. And I think they pulled it off. Like you were saying, the black was nice. There were some really nice touches to it. I know this is terribly summer when we're talking about specific parts of the uniform, but like look good, play good. I'm a huge believer in that. So, yeah, I thought they were great. I thought it was a pretty cool event. And I think if there's anything, I think every program talks about we're a family and all this stuff. But then you kind of see events like this and you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like you were saying, maybe there's as much to it as we want to believe there is. And who knows how that helps with other things like recruiting and whatnot.
Yeah.
So
I think it says a lot. And I do agree with you, though. The jersey, you know, we're stretching when we're talking about specific parts of the jersey here in summer. But, you know, as a recruiting tool, like, I don't know that every program does have that. And, yeah, we probably look at it through rose-colored glasses. But, it just means something to have guys from, like, not even superstar players, right? Like, it's not like, you know, the biggest players in the world.
Right.
It's that were just pillars of the program in their time. I don't know. I thought it was cool. I hope they keep doing it. I'm sure they will. But yeah, all in all, pretty cool.
Absolutely. So while our program is stabilizing, others are going a little chaotic, as chaotic as my dog, Wally, if you can hear him in the background, as Colorado and Arizona bolt for the Big 12. Colorado double dipping a little bit, a little boomerang action for the Buffs. Who's next, Austin?
Well, it seems like, well, first of all, let's talk about Colorado.
Yeah.
Pretty, because I think this says a lot. Like what just happened says a ton. I think the first thing it is like the first domino in the survival of the like three non-power two conferences has fallen, and it's a big one. And I will admit full, like, this is not the one I thought would happen for a variety of reasons. First of all, didn't think Colorado, I mean, you want to talk about Deion Sanders' impact. Here is the ultimate example. Colorado is a terrible football program. Like they bring nothing to the table. They have been absolutely horrible, more or less, honestly, since they went to the Pac-12. There's been very little. Them probably a lot longer, actually.
They're the worst Pac-12 program since they joined the Pac-12.
Yeah, they're garbage, and yet they just got plucked up, and they don't have a huge TV market attached to them. Like, there are other options for the Big 12, because the Big 12, one of the advantages they have is that they are not landlocked to a coast. Mm-hmm. They're in the middle. They could theoretically go just about anywhere. I mean, they have West Virginia in their conference. Like, they could go anywhere. And yet they chose Colorado. So, A, I think it says a tremendous amount about what people believe Deion Sanders can do at Colorado. I mean, this, I think it's kind of insane, but it's a testament to that, what that force of personality can do. It's also a huge testament to the Big 12 and an equally large indictment of the Pac-12. Like, the fact that Colorado left your conference, like the Colorado left to join the Pac-12 and then turned around and went back to the Big 12, which they were unhappy with. The only conference where the only thing that's happened in that time is them losing their biggest programs.
Yep.
Like, that's all that's happened. And they still went back. That's how,
that's hopeless, so bad.
That's how hopeless and mismanaged the Pac-12 is. Like, that is...
I
don't know how else to say it besides pathetic. Like, it's absolutely pathetic. They deserve to be folded if that's the case. So, I didn't think the Big 12 would be one to survive, but, you know, they're putting themselves in a position to, at a minimum, outlive the Pac-12, which is now, I think, the biggest thing is, like, the next domino is, from everything we've heard, the two Arizona programs, Arizona and Arizona State, both going to the Big 12 as well. If that happens, truly the Pac-12 is just getting stripped for parts, and you just, the next domino, I think, is potentially going to come a lot sooner than people may have thought going into the summer.
Yeah, I don't know the relationship between U of A and ASU in the sense that, like, USC and UCLA kind of saw each other as partners, right? Like, this was a joint deal. Even Oklahoma and Texas, who hate each other, saw it as like a package deal to, you know.
Yeah.
The difference here is, you know, Colorado already jumped. So, like, where does Arizona State, are they left holding you know, a shit bag? Or are they like, and Arizona's like, ha, sucks to suck. Yeah, I have no idea what their relationship
both, is. I think the rumor is they're both going.
Okay, so if they're in, got to tell our Big 12 friends, don't get in the hot tub.
Yeah, guys, I know you're from Oklahoma, but let me tell you.
Trust
you
me.
Do not get in that hot tub. So
a different breed of,
It's just different.
Tempe.
So if they're gone, right? So you're saying that in the past year, then Pac-12 will have lost USC, UCLA, Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State. Five of their 12 teams, almost half of their conference has now jumped ship. And they have, at this point, no immediate replacements lined up. There are rumors San Diego State is a popular one.
Sure.
But there's nothing lined up, which means they are left with Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Utah, Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State.
Tough
scene. I think it would be if this comes out and this next meteorites deal is a shitty deal, which I almost expect it to be. It's supposed to come out in the next 2 weeks. I can't imagine it's going to be good, just given that we haven't heard anything about it until now. It might not even exist. Like it's possible it's not even a real thing. But like those teams are going to get scooped up. And some of them are going to get screwed. Like, I don't know what Oregon State and Washington State are going to do. The only thing I'll say confidently is I think Oregon and Washington will be fine. Someone will come get them. It could be the Big 12. Big 12 would be silly if they didn't immediately try to go get them and absorb them as well. I think the Big 10 will, without a doubt, try to get those two programs. But then you get down into that middle tier, and it's like, does Stanford just stay and be the best in that conference and try to get an auto bid? Like, does Utah try and roll into the Big 12? Like, I just don't really know. I don't know what happens. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see, like, a merger of Pac-12 and, like, the best of the Mountain West. And that's kind of the best you can do, right?
It really is.
I mean, and then... Because if we already described the Colorado situation, there's no world in which a Big 12 team would consider leaving the Big 12 for the Pac-12. If Colorado just walked in the door and was like, guys, we messed up.
Yeah, like, hey.
Like, please let me back in.
It's the Adam Sandler at the door talking into the buzzer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby. I didn't mean that.
I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean it.
That's exactly it. So, I mean, and then where do you pull from? Nowhere. Like, it's the Conference of Champions. It was a good run.
Yeah. Bill Walton is Mr. Big Ten Bill now. I don't know what else he's supposed to be. But
dude, you know what's wild, even crazier, is that the trophy that goes to, like, the overall best athletic department is consistently in the Pac-12. It's consistently those schools that are in the top 10.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show your whole athletic department being dominant does not matter.
Yeah. I think what this does too is it maybe an underrated element here is it, I think it's going to accelerate the football living independent of the rest of sports because it feels like this feels like it's the first domino this year and that the rest are set to fall. It's like the Pac-12 and the Big 12 are about to get completely shaken up, which will open some very interesting other doors with the ACC. I mean, I don't know if it forces the ACC charter members' hands to try to get out of this grant of rights or like what maybe some type of settlement looks like, what fines they have to pay. Like it would not surprise me at all if this is like the thing that, again, gets Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina and Virginia and these programs that the SEC or Big Ten would absolutely gobble up in a heartbeat.
Right.
I wonder if this is what gets them to be like, okay, can we eat the, you know, $50 million fine or whatever it's going to be to break out of this Bill of Rights? I don't know. Because it feels like we probably thought this was, what, 2-3 years away? But
yeah,
in reality... It might all happen like in the next 8 months. Like, it could all happen before the end of the football season. It would not surprise me whatsoever. Like, this was a very surprising. This was the timing of it was pretty shocking. But yeah, there's a couple teams out there right now, man. If I'm a fan of Oregon State, if I'm a fan of Utah, if I'm a fan of, you know, Washington State, I'm getting nervous because I don't know what's about to happen.
You know what's crazy is that, like, we the government is getting involved, at least at the NIL, like the NIL. And, like, we love college football so much in this country, like certainly different pockets of this country, that it is like it is an issue that must be solved. Like, it to the you know what I mean? Like,
well, 100%.
Because it's not just going to be left floundering in the water forever. Like, there's too much money at stake and too much passion accompanying that money for it to be anything but become the minor league of the NFL. Like, so we will see it happen. That's kind of the crazy thing, is we all kind of thought there was this distant.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Thing, and we're coming up on it. So
yeah. Oh, it's coming for us. Here's last thought here. If you want to know how much America loves football, Tommy Tuberville is a senator.
So bad.
You know, that's really all you have to actually know. And then also, it's like you said, it's America loves it so much that it has become arguably the country's greatest export, and is like. There is so much money in it that it has to be regulated, because it's antitrust, it's corruption, it's money laundering. Like, it's all of these things can take place within this massive industry that centers on a bunch of kids playing a game. It's the most American thing possible. And, you know, for better or worse.
The funniest thing that I can compare it to, especially to somebody like not from America, is I'm like, all right, during the latest presidential election, we're trying to figure out who running mates were, the vice president picks. And political Twitter, very powerful, large section of Twitter, as you can imagine, was trying to figure out how to best go about that. College football Twitter had the flight maps things figured out that day. And it was like, that's where we put our passion, right? Like, that's what I mean. Is like, college football Twitter is like, oh, that's all you need to figure out? Like, do that. This, I looked at my team's plane this morning to see what recruit we were going after.
Like, you heard of a little thing called FlightAware? Yeah, it's, I've been tracking jets out of Piscataway for a decade. Like, yes, I'm aware of what's going on here. That's, it is quite the industry.
And then political Twitter and America at large, like casual, normal people, were like, what the hell was that? Like, why did they figure that out so fast? And it's like, and then it's kind of one of those touch grass moments for us.
Yeah, it is an eye opener when we're like, no, you don't. We realize this is not the purpose, but this also is the exact purpose of this.
All right. What do you think? We're getting close here, man. It's August if you're listening, and that means there is football this very month, and more than that, that means we need to be doing position previews, because we have a handful to do before the season will be upon us. So we thought we'd start with the area that I think you and I had discussed in prior podcasts as being potentially the most important tandem as it relates to the ceiling of this year. Would you agree or disagree before we unveil?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the lifeblood of any great program, and without a question, will be a huge determining factor in how effective Michigan State is this year. No question.
So So why don't you take us through the offensive line first before we jump in with the running backs? There's been some sustained talent and then some new faces, but I'll let you take it from the top.
Yeah, I mean, offensive line is, it's no secret, right? Like this is, it's like starting pitching in baseball. It is absolutely critical to the success of your team. And the great programs, they're the ones that produce great linemen. Go look at Ohio, the guys that Ohio State got drafted last year. Go look at who Bama puts in the draft, Georgia. I mean, these are the great programs. Michigan, because they consistently have great offensive line. Michigan doesn't really belong in that draft category yet, but they still have consistently great lines year in and year out, especially of late. So Michigan State's line is in an interesting position. They have, it's been a clear area of recruiting emphasis for Mel Tucker since he's come in. And Chris Kapilovich, the offensive line coach, has done a good job, honestly, on the whole, getting talent out of what's been a not the most talented group. But you're starting to see we're reaching this critical mass where the guys that are playing are either upperclassmen that were good enough to, you know, move through the process with Kapilovich when he came in, or young guys or transfers that Coach Cap went out and got. That's what comprises this offensive line. So as of today, the starting group is probably going to look something like this from left to right. Brandon Baldwin, J.D. Duplain, Nick Samak, Gino Vandermark, and Keyshawn Blackstock. Now, again, the left side of that line, Baldwin through Samak, those are D'Antonio guys, if I remember correctly. Baldwin maybe being in the first class that Tucker got. I can't remember. But they are upperclassmen. Duplain and Samak could have definitely gone to the pros and probably been, you know, mid to late round draft picks, but made the decision to come back and anchor this line. Will probably be on a few early season watch lists. Wouldn't surprise me. So that's a lot of experience on the left-hand side of that line. And on the right-hand side, Blackstock was, I think, the number one community college or JUCO transfer. Had offers from a lot of different places. He can plug in either at guard or tackle. The common line of thought is that he's probably penciled in at that right tackle spot. And part of that is because of Vandermark. Vandermark was a four-star recruit in Mel Tucker's first class, I think. Was kind of like one of the stars of that class. And he played a decent amount last year, especially in the back half of the year. So would be only natural that he's kind of the presumed favorite. That offensive line, all things together, that's a step forward. Like that, mm-hmm. That's not a bad group. And one of the things to note here is that Blackstock, if he wins the job, will win it over last year's starter, Spencer Brown. When you can create a dynamic like that, where it's you brought somebody in and they unseated the player from last year, that's a good thing. That's a great, like you talk about wanting to create that healthy tension, that competition in the room. This is as good a way as any to do it. And Blackstock looks, apparently so far, has looked pretty darn good. So great starting group behind them. I think the really exciting things for fans should be some of these young names, because there's a lot of, especially from last year's class, a lot of good young recruits that came in. Names really from the last two classes. I'll just rip off a few here. You got Braden Miller, one of the big tackles from Colorado. Christian Phillips, another huge guard who's a redshirt. This guy's also a redshirt freshman. Gavin Brocious, Cole Dellinger, Stanton Rammel. I mean, these guys were all high three to low four star recruits. I mean, Stanton Rammel is from Alabama, meaning Michigan State went into the state of Alabama and beat out not only Alabama, but Auburn and all these other SEC schools to get him. So there's a lot of young functional depth. And there's some mid-tier guys in between there. Ethan Boyd, Kevin Wigginton, Dallas Fincher, and the aforementioned Brown. Listen, you're talking about anywhere from 13 to 15 guys, all of which are either going to start, have starting or playing experience, or are young and are better recruits than any of the guys in front of them on the depth chart. So this is a really interesting and exciting group, and I would expect them to probably rotate seven or eight guys, especially early on, just because I don't know that you're going to get five surefire starters coming out of camp, especially with Blackstock being a new face and Vandermark being young. But you're at a point now where it's like, if any of those five names, Baldwin, Duplain, Samak, Vandermark, and Blackstock, aren't starters, it's because somebody came in and took the job. the same way Peyton Thorne did over Anthony Russo 2 years ago, you know, the same way that so many players have done, honestly, over the course of Michigan State's history. It happens every year in college football. So it's a good thing to have. But I will say the importance of this group to me, especially on offense, it will dictate the success of the team. If this group is bad, Michigan State will have a bad offense, a very bad offense. If this group is downright bad, they will be horrible on offense. Because unless Noah Kim is walking on water, like, if he doesn't have a run game to rely on, put it this way. When Peyton Thorne had a run game to rely on, you saw him look like a pretty darn good quarterback and set a school record for touchdown passes. When he didn't, you saw him look like a guy that everybody wanted benched and people were happy when he transferred. That's what we're talking about here. Noah Kim, I don't know where he is on the talent scale compared to Peyton Thorne. I think he's got a little bit more of a live arm from what we've seen, but he's never really started. He hasn't played a lot of college football. If he has the same way Thorne was, if actually less experienced than Thorne, if he has an offensive line that can block for him and give him time, he's going to be in a much more realistically successful position. But if he doesn't, things could get real weird real quick.
Well, you've already kind of, I guess, decided who you think QB1 is. We'll get back to that. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. You mentioned about the kind of progression of this line. And when you kind of said those names and the growth that has taken place, you can kind of see why Pick Six Previews ranked them seventh in the conference, which is, as you said, a step forward, a huge step forward, actually. And if they are seventh best in the conference, how does that make, what do you think that means the MSU did that year record wise, putting you on the spot?
If they're the seventh best line?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Michigan State's 6-7 win team, if that's the case. Team, probably.
I would agree. So that has to be better, right? They have to be better than that. They have to outperform, you know, maybe what the projections are, and it starts here. And if they, like, you know, the projections for win losses now for MSU is about six wins. So to win 8 or 9, this team, this group, we think is probably going to have to be not just top five, but maybe even fourth or so. So, that brings us to the running backs, because you can certainly, it helps to have a rookie of the year, NFL rookie of the year in your starting backfield. But we don't have that. We saw what happens when you don't have that last year. But to be fair, as you were saying to me before the pod, that offensive line was much stronger than last year's, or at least performed that way. And not just because of Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker's first point of contact was unfortunately smaller than his counterparts, because, well, the offensive line still wasn't that great. And he's just amazing, but significant improvement over last year's team. What I'm getting at here is we have some running backs that maybe are not going to be NFL rookie of the year, but we do have one wild card, and we're excited to see. Who do you think will be starting against Central Michigan as of today?
I'm going to play it safe. This is going to be my tack the entire way. I kind of spoiled it with the Kim comment before. I think it'll be Jalen Berger that gets the first carry. But I think between him and Carter, you're going to see a pretty even split early on. And, you know, it will take care of itself moving forward. I think one way to look at this group is that there is, once again, there's talent here. If you look up and down, you've got, Carter is an athletic freak, like a weight room warrior. This dude is enormous. And people are, you know, the coaches and the program are very excited about his potential. And if you go back and look, like, listen, he played for UConn. So take, you know, not great. And he
hey now
a productive.
Was it you who pointed out to me, or was it Sheehan who was like, "Well, hey, Kenneth Walker went to Wake Forest."
Like, I said that.
Yes,
that
okay. Was okay. True. Well, listen, it's true though.
It is, without question. I believe that where they come from doesn't necessarily matter. But what I'm saying is he popped. He stood out when you watch him play. Like, what he brought to the table isn't dictated by the team that he played for. It's dictated by his physical ability. He's a freak. My point is he wasn't a huge recruit, but Jordan Simmons was a high 3-star. Jaron Mangum was a 4-star. And so was Jalen Berger. There's a lot of talent in this room. And if Carter comes in and is the starter again, he took the job. And yeah. I would anticipate he is going to get a very good opportunity to do that. But again, I look at this room top to bottom, Berger, Carter, Jaron Mangum, Jordan Simmons, and Davion Prim. And it's not a super deep, like only 5 running backs is, I know it sounds like a lot, but when you're rotating probably 3, it's not a ton. So this room could get thin pretty quick, but I think it's in a much healthier place than last year, in part because the offensive line is definitely going to be better. Berger is going to be more comfortable. We're not here to besmirch Jerick Bernard or
Broussard.
Sorry. Yeah. Jerick Broussard or Simmons, but Mangum and Carter are going to be more useful players. Jaron Mangum, I think, is actually sort of an underrated get on the in the transfer portal. He was at one point in time a big priority recruit for Michigan State. Coming out of the state of Michigan, ended up going to Colorado, playing for Mel Tucker at one point, went to USF after that, and now ends up at Michigan State. He is a downhill big body runner. I mean, this dude is probably going to be a big time. I would imagine his packages will be short yardage, goal line, that type of stuff. He's probably a good blocking back. So I would anticipate he gets some touches. But in terms of lead dog, it's one of Berger or Carter. I mean, and again, Simmons, I think last year, Jordan Simmons fairly or unfairly caught a lot of strays online because he just kind of ran straight forward. And if the hole was there, it worked out. If not, he didn't. And that was such a stark difference from what you saw out of Kenneth Walker the year before, who made people miss in the backfield, like you said, time and time again, and was just super shifty. So he's now 4th on the depth chart. Again, it's not jumping off the page like, oh, they got all these 5-star recruits and all this stuff, but this team is building functional depth where guys that played last year, Spencer Brown, Jordan Simmons, are now down on the depth chart. That's a good thing. That helps shore up the edges for Michigan State. Again, it insulates them against injuries to a degree. I think this room could be a pretty good room. And if these two groups work together and you have, again, I'll use the same number, John. I think if you have the 6th or 7th best running game in the Big Ten, you will see a significantly, significantly more improved and consistent offense, no matter who the quarterback is. Unless the quarterback, again, don't know who it's going to be, unless they are atrocious, like just atrociously bad, you're going to get a much more consistent offense than you got last year. Because last year, it just felt like it was missed holes, drop balls, bad blocks, like just all these little things that, kind of compounded on each other and partially were due to depth. This year, that depth is there. A lot of veterans got brought in through the transfer portal, again, kind of around the periphery, but that's how they want to utilize it. And I think that these two groups are good examples of that.
The running back or the running game was so uninspiring that the idea of letting Peyton Thorne cook was oft discussed.
And, oft, indeed.
And not something anyone felt great suggesting. More of a result of 2 NFL wide receivers being on the field at all times. But yeah, I mean, that's where it was. That's how big of a deal it is this year. And to your point about, I think we were saying earlier, Jordan Simmons is, that guy started for a Michigan State team. And now he's the 4th option. That's a good thing. Like, that means your team is improving and getting better. And certainly, we think that this year's running game specifically should be improved from last year. as you said, if it's not, it's going to be counting the days till hoop season.
Yeah, that's for sure. But again, I think the talent is there. It's there in the room. And I think we know that Jay Johnson can scheme it up. It's just about having consistency and getting 3 yards instead of one. You know what I mean? And just underrated part about this offensive line and actually this group, and we'll get to them later, is that tight end room. Another group they built out sort of similarly, added a handful of guys in that room, a few of them specifically for blocking reasons, that could help with this initiative as well. But yeah, overall, I'm cautiously optimistic. Again, all the credit in the world to Pick Six Previews, does an awesome job. I'm confident these two groups can outperform their rankings. Offensive line maybe is the harder of the two, but running backs being 10th best in the conference, I don't know. I've got a little more faith in them than that.
We hope so. I'm with you though. I think so. I think Berger alone, if we remember, was Wisconsin starting running back too. Like, or getting carries. So, you know. It's not for lack of got guys. We got enough guys to make some noise. That's for sure. So we think in the weeks to come, we'll be previewing of the other positions. Hopefully collecting more realignment news. We're sitting pretty. This is nice. It's like when you've won your tournament, NCAA tournament game, and you just sit back and watch the rest of the chaos. Like, we're fine. Big Ten is solid. Excited to just sit back and watch the chaos here.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before, but like, man, we really are in the catbird seat. Don't take for granted the fact that Michigan State has a home in all of this, and that home will never get taken away, ever. Right. Michigan State means, and that should like encourage people, and like, that's why we're so bullish. That's why people say, listen, we belong in certain conversations, because we do. Michigan State, you know, be it football or certainly basketball, like, we are a national program. They should act as such and hold themselves to that standard, because that's what they are.
Absolutely. Well, we're hanging on and waiting on that next Nat, whichever sun can deliver first. Before we wrap, quick shout out for Kunj Gonka and your Cerveza Del Rey. Thank you for sharing your beverage of choice when listening to the only podcast. Anyone else, if you're interested in sponsoring, let us know. We love to hear and listen to where you're listening from, and maybe a few shout outs next week as well. Just let us know.
Love it. All right, guys. This show has been presented by Bet Online. For John, this is Austin. We'll catch you next week.
Dip.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.